Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church. Well, this is kind of becoming a tradition. I started this a couple years ago. The Sunday before Independence Day, I get a little tiny political, which I don't usually get political, but I get a little bit political because I love the history of our country. I love the plan that our founding fathers had, the ideas that are behind our Constitution, and so this is that Sunday, okay? And so next week we're going to start a brand new series that we actually did years ago that's being remixed called Potty Mouth, and I want you to come next week for Potty Mouth. Some of you have a potty mouth and you don't even realize it, all right? And invite all your friends, probably most of them at work, who have potty mouths as well, because we're going to talk about that. But before we do, I want to talk about just kind of our culture, kind of where we are as a country, kind of some trends that I see. And one of the trends that I see most common in our country is that we love to criticize our leaders. I mean, if you think about it for just a second, think about it even internally. You can answer this question internally. You don't have to raise your hand, even though if I asked you to raise your hand, all of you would probably raise your hand if you were being honest. Have you ever criticized leadership? Have you ever criticized your parents? Have you ever criticized your boss? Have you ever criticized your pastor? Have you ever criticized your senator? Have you ever criticized your House of Representatives? Have you ever criticized our president? Most of us probably have at one time or another, and it's just something that we just commonly see all the time now. You turn on the news, you turn on the media, there is somebody probably criticizing some sort of leadership. And what I think that we've done is that we have put such an expectation on our leaders. We have so many expectations of them that we've almost stripped them of their humanity in a way. To the point where we've gone like, look, you're the leader, you're my parent, you're my boss, you're my pastor, you're my governor, you're my senator, you're my president. You're not allowed to screw up. You're not human, right? You're the president, you're my dad, you're my mom, you're the boss, you're the CEO. You're not allowed to screw up. And that's just not true, really. I mean, we strip them of their humanity and we're almost surprised that they have emotions like we do. Wow, go figure. Like, they deal with anger, and they have temptations. And oh my goodness, we are just thrown for a loop when we find out that they have a past, you know? That they did stuff in their college years, in their teens, in their 20s, in their 30s, before they were saved. I mean, we almost just love to torture and criticize leadership. And we just have this expectation that not only are leaders not allowed to screw up, leaders aren't allowed to be human, but also, too, leaders are supposed to solve all of our problems. You know, I watched a little bit of the Democratic debate this week, and that's pretty much kind of what they talked about. How are you going to fix these problems? What are you going to do for us? How are you going to fix these things? Why are you going to fix these things that don't need fixing? And they just went around and around and around because there's this expectation that we put on our leaders, especially as the next election approaches, that these people need to solve all of our problems, that these people need to get us out of the jams that we are in. We need a good leader. We need a good president. We need good government officials because they are supposed to take care of us. And they're the reason we are where we are. But that's simply not the truth. And I want to kind of give you a little bit different reality and kind of help you think about this. And I want you to think about this. They're not the reason you are where you are. The reality is this. You are where you are because of you. You are where you are because of you. Can we just be honest for a minute? And can we just really, you know, evaluate ourselves for a minute? Oh, I want you to think about this. I have participated in every bad decision I have ever made. Me. I have participated in every bad decision I have ever made. My biggest regrets, I participated in. My things that I look back on and I am shameful of, I am guilty of, I am embarrassed by, you were the mastermind behind that event. You were the mastermind behind that experience. It was you. But a lot of times we don't like to own up to that. We don't like to fess up to that. What do we like to do? We like to blame our ex. We like to blame our friends. We like to blame our parents. We like to blame our government. We like to blame our boss. They're the reason it was them. I had to. They, them, they said, they pushed, they asked. But the truth is that behind every bad regret that we have, I fully participated in it, and I was the mastermind behind the decisions that I made. I can do bad to myself all by myself. I am the problem in a lot of these situations, and I can point my finger at so many different people. I can point my finger at my pastor. I can point my finger at my boss. I can point my finger at my parents. I can point my finger at the government. But the truth is that I am the mastermind behind every bad decision that I make. And the truth is that a lot of us, what we need to do is look at the one person in this country that we can actually change. Myself. The truth is that what I probably need to do most often, the place that I need to start is I need to start, if I want to see change in my own life, if I want to see change in this country, before I criticize anybody else, I really honestly need to look at the American in the mirror. The one that I see every day, the one who participated in every bad decision that I ever made, that is where I need to start. And what I want to encourage you to do today, and what I want to encourage anybody who's listening to our podcast or who's watching on YouTube or Facebook, is that all of us need to make the decision to lead ourselves first. Before I criticize anybody else, before I point my finger, before I evaluate how somebody else is doing their job, or how they should lead our country, or how they should lead our state, or what they should have done differently as parents, or how they're screwing up their company and I could do it better. What I need to do before any of that is even necessary or possible is I need to deal with the American in the mirror. And I need to choose to lead myself first. Because the truth is that great leaders last because they lead themselves first. If you want to be a great leader, not only for yourself, but the people that you influence, for your family, for your kids, if you are a boss or a manager or you oversee any kind of people at all, if you want to have lasting influence, if you want to have a powerful effect on that group of people, you've got to make the decision before you criticize anyone else, before you point your finger or talk about anybody else's performance, that you have to make the decision to lead yourself. Because great leaders last because they lead themselves first. I have to make that decision for myself. And the truth is that if you think about it, anybody that you want to be like or anybody you don't want to be like, it's because of that right there. Think about your parents for a minute. It's always 50-50. Do you want to be like your parents? Are there certain aspects where you like what your father did? You want to be like your father in that area, or you know, your mother, or they did this and you don't so much want to be? What is that all based around? Where did that come from? It's because the truth is that when it comes to your parents, you want to be like your parents in the areas where they led themselves well. And the truth is that in the areas where you don't want to be like your parents, those are areas where they didn't lead themselves well. See, great leaders last because they lead themselves first, but they also inspire people as well to be better themselves, to lead themselves as well. If there's certain qualities of your parents that you're like, man, I want to be just like my dad. I want to be just like my mom. The reason you want to be like them is because they led themselves well in that area. But if there's certain areas where you're like, I don't want to be like them, it's because they didn't lead themselves well in their health. They didn't lead themselves well in their emotions. They didn't lead themselves well in their attitude or their finances. They made poor decisions. They didn't lead themselves well. And so for that reason, you don't want to be like them at all. You want to be the exact opposite. See, if you want to inspire greatness to people, If you want to have influence, if you want to have an impact on this world and on people, you've got to choose to lead yourself first and lead yourself well. So what I want to do this morning is I want to give you three decisions that you have to make. Three decisions that if you decide this morning, you know what? You're right. I am going to lead myself well because I do want to inspire greatness. I do want to lead my family well. I want to lead my company well. I want to inspire change in this community and in this country, and it's going to start with me. And so I'm going to lead myself well. Well, if you're going to do that, you have to make three decisions. And these are three tough pills to follow, but there's just no getting around it. These are three things you must do to lead yourself well. And the first one is this: I will not lie to myself, even when the truth makes me feel bad about myself. I will not lie to myself, even when the truth makes me feel bad about myself. I will not lie to myself. We are in an epidemic. I don't know when it happened. I don't know where it changed. It just kind of came into culture and happened. But we are in this epidemic where we do not allow healthy, I use this word, I'm going to put quotations around it so you don't misquote me when you email me. We're in this epidemic where we have disregarded healthy guilt. There is such a thing as healthy guilt. Guilt is not a bad thing, but we hate feeling guilty, don't we? I mean, if somebody says something to us and they make us feel guilty, what do? We turn around and we make them feel guilty for making us feel guilty is what we do. I mean, we use this phrase. This is probably where everything started to change. We started to use this phrase. I'm going to let you fill in the blank, okay? It's going to be on the screen. It says, don't what me? Don't judge me. Yeah, right? Don't judge me. We don't like to be judged. Nobody can judge me. So if somebody makes us feel guilty, if somebody makes us feel bad about ourselves, even though they might be right, even though they might be correct, we say, don't make me feel guilty. I don't want to feel guilty. Feeling guilty is bad. Feeling guilty is the worst thing on earth. Don't tell me I did something wrong. There's no way I did anything wrong. And we deny it. We deny. We make them feel guilty for making us feel guilty, because even if it's healthy guilt, we want nothing to do about it. And in those moments when we are fed a little pill of healthy guilt, we deny and we deny and we deny and we lie to ourselves. And we say, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong. There's nothing I need to change. There's nothing I need to do differently. We lie to ourselves and we fight back instead of possibly taking the truth that's there and the healthy guilt that we're given and using it to actually better ourselves and lead ourselves into being a great leader. Just a couple weeks ago, I've made a change. I'm very proud of myself, so I'm going to brag about myself here in my sermon. I've been coming home, and my wife said something to me a couple months ago. We were at the dinner table. We're having dinner, and I got my phone out on the dinner table, and I'm looking at emails. People are texting me, because especially in our church context, you guys all work during the day. So getting a hold of you during the day is impossible. So you all start getting back to me at like 5:30 to 7:30 at night. That's when you start to text and get back to me and call me and stuff. So I'm on my phone and I'm doing the church social media and I'm doing the email and you guys are texting and calling me and stuff. And my wife goes, hey, I really like it if, you know, you could have dinner with the rest of the family. And what do I immediately do? I'm like, I'm here. I'm right here. There's four of us. There's all four of us. I'm right here. I'm sitting down. TV's off. She's like, yeah, but you got your phone in your hand. You're working. Really wish you'd put your phone down. You wouldn't be working at the dinner table. And what do I do? She made me feel guilty. So you know what I did? I made her feel guilty back. And I put it on all of you. And I'm like, honey, you know, I would, but just Bo's really going through something, you know? I mean, you want me to put my phone down? Or you want me to help Bo? I think you want me to help Bo, right? I mean, I can't help it. These people, CJ doesn't get back to me during the day. It's his fault. He's texting me worship questions right now. And so I put it all on you, and you caused a real rift in my marriage. Thanks a lot. But, you know, I immediately fought back. But I knew she was right. And I was lying to myself at first when I said that there wasn't a problem with that, or trying to justify it in some way, or fighting back and trying to get her off of me. And so you know what? I did. And now when I come home, I go and I put my phone on the nightstand. I can't hear it. It might ding, and I'll probably go check it about mid before I go to bed or something like that in case there was an emergency. But I go put my phone down, and when I'm home, I'm home. No phone, nothing, and I just put my hands behind my back. I don't know what to do with myself, but I'm there with my family. Now, here's the odd thing. Let's take a little time out. My wife still gets to keep her phone out and play her games, and so if you could all make her feel guilty today as we leave and say, you know, you really ought to spend more time with your husband and stop playing those games on your phone, it would really help me out. But we do that, right? If somebody makes us feel guilty, we fight back. We fight back because you can't judge me. Don't judge me. But what if we did something differently? What if instead of fighting back, instead of fighting the guilt, maybe it's a healthy dose of guilt that we need. Maybe it's something we need to hear. Maybe some of you, I saw you kind of tapping each other, nudging each other. Some of you need to put your phones down a little more often. What if somebody told you that? How would you respond to that kind of feedback? What if somebody came up to you and they told you that, hey, you're not healthy. You shouldn't eat that. You should really cut that out. You should stop drinking soda. You should stop doing that thing. You really need to knock that off. You're not doing anything. Will you get that cigarette out of your mouth? That's disgusting. That's terrible for you. You're killing yourself. What if somebody said, you really need to change your finances? Do you really think that you need to go spend thousands of dollars of that when you have this much debt racked up over here? Do you really think you need to go buy that when you can't even afford to buy this over here? Or what if somebody just told you, you know what? You got a bad attitude. You're just a jerk. You really need to change the way that you talk to people. How would you respond to that? What would you say to them? Most of us, we would not be able to handle it because we do not like to feel bad about ourselves. But here's the thing that you need to hear and that we need to hear more often. There are worse things in the world than feeling bad about yourself. There are worse things than feeling bad about yourself. But if we would all become better self-leaders, and instead of fighting guilt, but receive it as healthy guilt, receive it as something that we might need to hear, and evaluate what we need to take away from this, evaluate what we need to hear out of the message that we're receiving, and better ourselves for it, we would actually improve. We would actually be free. See, that's what the truth does. The truth, it sets us free. But the thing is that we deceive ourselves. And that's exactly what the Bible tells us in the Word. When we look at Jeremiah, he tells us this in chapter 17. He says, the heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? Jeremiah, he found this little nugget secret of life, and he said, here's the thing, you are a sucker for you. You are. Your heart is deceitful. Your heart will always lead you astray. You really ought to not listen to your gut, because your gut is probably wrong. Your gut is so selfish, and your gut is so defensive. And instead of being a sucker for you, maybe you need to open up your ears and listen a little bit more to what other people have to say and not lie to yourself. Even though the truth may make you feel bad about yourself, take that truth in as a chance to grow, as a chance to develop, as a chance to better yourself so that you can become a better leader, so that you can lead others well. I will not lie to myself, even if it makes me feel bad about myself. The second thing is this. The second thing, the commitment I have to make is I will prioritize what I value most over what I want right now. I will prioritize what I value most over what I want now. You know, we are in a culture of self-gratification. Hungry, why wait? I mean, just do it, just spend it, just buy it, just do what you need to do. And so all the time with our money, with our finances, with our health, I mean, we're just living in the moment. We're just YOLO. We're just in it for whatever we need to do right now. And we spend without a budget. We spend without a plan. We throw money at things that we shouldn't throw money at things because we just throw away what we value over what we could have right now in this moment. We do that with our health. We do that with our friendships. We do this with our relationships. We do this with our marriages. But let me ask you a question. What do you value in your life? What is it that you value? What is important to you? What is valuable to you in this life? Think about it. As a matter of fact, one thing I want you to do this week, I'm giving you homework, all right? Came the wrong Sunday because you're getting homework. But this week, you're probably going to have a day off. You're probably going to have July 4th, maybe even the 5th off. You got some time this week. I want you to wake up like an hour to 30 minutes earlier. I know that'll kill some of you, but just trust me. This is going to be valuable. I want you to wake up. I want you to put a cup of coffee on. I want you to, yeah, that's right. If you don't drink coffee, you're going to start this week. You're going to put a pot of coffee on. You're going to turn some music on. And I want you to get your phone app out. I want you to get a journal out. I want you to get a scratch piece of paper. I don't care if you write on your table. And I want you to write 3 to 5 values that you have in your life. 3 to 5 values that you have in your life. See, here's the thing. Most of us have never stopped and done this or thought about this before. What do you value? We're just driving without a route, driving without a plan. But let me ask you seriously, what is it that you value? Because if you do not have your values figured out, if you fail to discover what you value, you will never get what you really want. You're going somewhere, but you're going nowhere. Because you don't know what you're actually headed for. You've got to discover what it is you value and what it is that you want in this life. When you have your values, you are able to lead yourself to that destination. You know where you're going. You know where your value. You know where you do not bend and where you do not break. What is it that you value in life? Because what you value is what you will attain. You know, Jesus gave us so many things to value in this life. You know, he gave us the greatest command. In John 13:34, he tells us this. He says, a new command I give to you. This is like the command. This is the thing. This is like the law above all laws. He says, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. You have to love one another. Jesus gave it that value and he said, you know what I want you to do? I want you to love one another. I want you to take care of one another. I want you to live a life that's less about receiving and more about giving. I want you to give your life away more than you take in, more than you take from other people. And I want you to live that kind of life. Paul, and later on in Galatians, he wrote this letter to them and he said, the only thing that counts in this life is faith expressing itself through love. There are these values that you can pull out of Scripture, pull out of these letters that Paul wrote, pull out of these things that Jesus said when he was with his disciples, where he basically taught them this life plan of things to value, this map to have that as you journey through life, these are the things that you should value and you should value above everything else, things that you should put first, things that you should make a priority in your life. I read a great quote this week. It said, the value of life is always measured by how much of it is given away. You know, for me, I've just been thinking about that so very much. I've been thinking about that. My wife and I, we just celebrated our anniversary a couple weeks ago, 9 years of marriage, and I was thinking about that with my wife. My wife just, she epitomizes this to me. She just gives way more away than she receives or asks for herself. And you know what? For me, one of my values is that I hope I live a life where I care about people so much that I put them first above myself. That I live a life where I give more away than I receive. I want that for my life. And when my life is celebrated, when it's over, if any of you are there, you better get up and say this, okay? Because I want people to say at my funeral whenever I'm done is that he gave himself away freely. He gave himself away without complaining. He gave himself away without, you know, any kind of deals had to be made or IOUs or anything like that. He just gave himself away. What if you lived a life like that? What if at the end of your life, the thing that you had to hold on to wasn't your money, wasn't your job, wasn't what you built or anything like that? What if your legacy was in that you had faith that expressed itself through love? That what you were known best for was loving your neighbor. What if your life, at the end of your life, what was talked about was that you valued people that you didn't have to value? See, I think a lot of times what you may do this week, and don't make this mistake because I'm telling you right now you can't do it. If you go home and your values, you write family, just scratch that off because that doesn't count. Because here's the thing, and I'm real big about this. I've talked about this before. Family is something you have to do, okay? Being a dad, being a good mom, those aren't optional. Those aren't things you want to achieve. Those are things you must achieve, okay? People who aren't doing that, they're just failing at life. That's something you must do. I'm talking about, what if you valued people that you didn't have to value? What if you were known for loving people that you weren't expected to love? What if there were people who got up at your funeral and they said, you know what? I wasn't his kid, but he loved me like a son. Or you know what? He wasn't my family, but he treated me like family. I was just his neighbor. I was just his coworker. He was like a dad to me. She was like a mom to me. She was a mentor. They loved me like a brother. They loved me like a sister. What if you were known for loving and valuing people that weren't just your kids, weren't just your family, weren't just your aunts and uncles, weren't just your parents? What if you were known for loving people that you weren't expected to love? Would that be good enough for you in this life? Is that something that you value? Is that what something you once said about you? Because the measure of a life is measured by how much of it is given away. That's what we celebrate at funerals. That's what people talk about, the impact that they have. What do you value in this life? Because what you value is where you will eventually lead yourself. We all need to stop and evaluate our values in this world because that's what we're working to. And the last commitment is this. The last commitment is this. I will not attempt to lead myself by myself. So I'll read through this again. I will not lie to myself even when the truth makes me feel bad about myself. I will prioritize what I value most over what I want right now. And I will not attempt to lead myself by myself. Write this down, just in your head or in your phone or just stare at me, whatever you want to do. But here's the thing. Where you end up is determined by who you go with. Where you end up is determined by who you go with. When God created Adam, he looked at him and he said, this guy, he's a mess. Everything else he looked at and said, it's good. This is really good. Everything I've done, very, very good. Looked at him, nope, not good. Why? Because Adam was alone. He said, Adam needs somebody. This guy, he cannot be alone. He needs somebody. And so he created Eve because he saw that it was not good for man to be alone. Now, the thing God maybe should have done differently is make Eve better, because what happened? Eve took Adam where he wasn't supposed to go, right? Because of Eve, Adam messed up. They both got kicked out of the garden, but he didn't have anybody else to choose from, all right? It was either that or the animal that he had named goat. So he had Eve. And so who he went with, that's where he went. And so that's what happened. Eve led him astray. Thank God he let him multiply and, you know, have other people, because otherwise it would have just continued. But who you go with, that is exactly where you will end up. Where you end up is determined by who you go with. Our friends determine the direction we will go. We need people around us who will help us get where we want to go. We need people who will give us honest feedback, who will give us a little bit of healthy guilt, so that we can go where we want to go in this life. We need people who will support our values and not undermine our values. We need people who will encourage us, not tempt us away where it is we want to lead. We need people who are going to help us lead ourselves well. If you look at Solomon, he talked about what a friendship is, what friends are for, and he said this. He said, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. I love that. That should be like your friendship goals right there. He says, what's a friend for? What was a friend created for? What's the purpose of friendship? Friendship is for somebody to support you at all times, to love you at all times, to be there for you at all times. They were born for such a time as adversity. When you're in trouble, when you're in need, that's exactly when friendships are most important. You need people to go where you want to go. Where you end up will be determined by who you go with. So you need people going with you. If you're going to lead yourself well, you cannot do it by yourself. You need a support system. You need friends, and you need good ones at that. You know, for you, This is why I encourage you so often to be here every week. This is not so you get your gold star and you go to church. Quite honestly, you could screw up this experience really well. If you came in here and you didn't talk to anybody and you sat down and you didn't say a word to anybody, you're missing the full experience. You're not getting the point of this. The point of this is to come together with like-minded people, people who are wanting to go where you're going, people who want to get to where you want to get. People who are in the same season of life, who have just had kids, who are newly married, who are retired, people who have been where you have been, and people who are going where you want to go, and to surround each other as a community of faith, who value the same thing, who are willing to keep each other accountable, who are willing to speak truth into each other's lives and make us each other into better leaders. This is like self-leadership training day. And everyone here is expressing faith through love to one another and trying to push one another and motivate each other to where we want to go. This is why you need to be here so often. We only do this for an hour each week, okay? We're not here that much. But to take that hour and to make it a priority and to gather together with other like-minded people, other people of faith, other people who are searching for God's purposes and plans, and to inspire one another and to pull each other along to go, all right, you guys are my friends. You guys are my support system. You guys are the people I need for my marriage to be strong, for me to be a good leading parent, for me to do what I need to do at work. I need you guys. I need this time together, and we need to collectively worship and pray for one another and support one another. That's what we're doing here. You need people of faith. And like I'm going to encourage you all summer long in September when we have Circle Up and we kick off our groups that meet every 3 weeks or 3 weeks on, 1 week off throughout the entire school year. I know that seems like a lot. Oh my goodness, an hour of church and an hour with people during the week in their home where I can't sit there and like have my back to them. That's really weird. I can't do that. No, listen, you need groups. You need those people. I was just telling somebody from my group this week, I was like, dude, this is like, I love our church, but I love my church. I love my group. This is my group of people who know things about me that nobody else does. This is my group of people who keep me accountable. These are the people who tell me the things I need to hear, who support my values most. You need people like that around you. But here's the other thing too. Your kids need people like that. Let me talk to parents for a minute. All the parents in the room. Here's the thing. Not only do you need to be here every single week, you need your kids here every single week. Because where your kids end up is determined by who they are going with. Are you listening to me, parents? Where your kid ends up going, who they end up becoming, what they end up doing after they leave the nest and after they leave your home, and you're not watching everything they do, and you don't have a say in everything that they do or where they spend their money, all of that is going to be determined by who they are going with. And I cannot encourage you enough. We spend so much time every single week. Pastor Carrie and Wes and all of our teachers and volunteers spend so much time every week developing an atmosphere and an environment where your kids are not only learning about God and the values that Jesus taught, but they are also encouraging friendships. They are also encouraging relationships with one another to where when they think of who their friends are, when they think of the people that they can talk to, when they're a little bit older and they get out of that nursery and they get out of that pre-K room and they start having things happen to them in life where they don't feel like they can talk to their parents about it, but they can talk to their friends about it, we are trying to create not just a church or a child care program. We are trying to encourage a community around our children to where they support one another and they go through life together supporting one another. That's what our youth group's all about. We have a great group of boys. We need some more girls. I don't know what's happening, but we have a great group of boys who are so mature, who are so great, who just all went to youth camp together last week. And Wes and I got lunch this week, and we were talking about, we have such a great group of mature, hardworking, respectful, God-loving teenage boys in our youth group. And you know what? They support one another. They're there for one another. They love one another. They encourage one another. They're serving our church on the computer and in different ways. I mean, they're such a great group of men. It's because of their parents who have invested in this place, who have found support, who are leading their families well, but also too, those kids are also showing up every week. Their parents are making them show up every week, and they are also going through life with the right people. Here's the thing. If you got a teenager, you need to make sure they're at church on Sunday morning. When our youth small group starts back up in the fall, you need to make them go to youth group every week. I know some people tell me, my teenager, my little kid, I can't make them to go to church. If they live under your roof still, you can make them do whatever you need to make them do, all right? You make them go to school, I think you can make them go to church for an hour. And I know you don't want to do it because I didn't know but seriously, think about it for a minute. What do you value when it comes to your relationship with your kid? What do you value when it comes to the relationship with your teenager? What do you want for them? I know a lot of parents, I get it, I'm a parent too. I want to have a friendship with my kid. I value them. I want them to have a friendship with me. But here's the thing, more than I want them to have a friendship with me, I want them to have a relationship with God. And more than I want their happiness right now, I want them set up for success in the future when they leave my home. I got to tell you, man, whenever I was a teenager, my youth group changed my life. I was in youth group, and I was that kid sometimes. There were weeks I didn't want to go to youth group. I didn't want to go. I didn't want to be a part of it. I didn't want to go to church. But you know what? My parents made me. And I went to church every Sunday. I went to youth group every Tuesday night. And man, my youth group, they were my support structure. We went on mission trips together. We went to camp together. I made my decisions to follow Christ. I made my decision to be a pastor with my youth group, with my friends. When I went and hung out on Friday night, they kept me out of going and hanging out at Mid Rivers Mall, just doing whatever teenagers do at Mid Rivers Mall on Friday night. I'm so glad now that I didn't do that, but that's what I wanted to do. But instead, I went and hung out with my youth group. I went and did things with my crew, and they saved me probably from making so many poor mistakes. But then even later on, man, when I was a senior in high school, I had this kid walk up to me in our youth group, and he said, where are you going to college at? I said, I'm going to Mid-American Nazarene University. And he said, we should be roommates. And he was kind of newer to the youth group, and I was like, yeah, sure, we should be roommates. Which really, I was just like, whatever, you know, yeah, sure, maybe that'll happen, you know, sure, that maybe be a good idea. And then he went to summer orientation, and I didn't, because again, I didn't want to go be social and meet people or anything out. But he went to summer orientation. He came back at youth group one night. He's like, hey, I went to summer orientation. I signed this up. We're going to be roommates. And I was like, shoot. I told him, sure, I guess that's the thing. So we were roommates. And so that fall, we moved in together. And his parents came. And my parents came. And his parents, his mother bought us matching comforters. And so we had this lovely little bedroom set that we put on our bunk beds. We looked like we were twin brothers that came out of Troy, Missouri. It was, you know, so embarrassing. But, you know, there it was. It was my roommate. And let me tell you, man, even in college, like I went to a Christian college and I didn't want to go to a Christian college. I wanted to go to a different school. I had different plans. I wanted to go to Southeast Missouri State in Cape Girardeau. That's where I wanted to go. But I went to a Christian college. Best decision I ever made to go to a Christian college. Because at a Christian college, I had a support group. I had friends who valued the same thing I valued. I had people who didn't tempt me away from what I valued. I had people who supported me. I had a roommate that disapproved of every girl that I ever dated until I met my wife, Kate Davis. That's how I knew she was the right one, because my roommate from my youth group told me it was okay to ask her. But we supported one another. We lived together through those 4 years. And then we graduated. And then you know what happened after that? 2.5 years later, we planted a church together. He plays bass, I preach, it's a good relationship. But I call that my first marriage, because when I lived with Darren Ware supported me in my relationship with God. Darren Ware got me where I am today and supported me. His family supported me. His family is like my second family. All his brothers and sisters and people he's married to, we have become a family together, and that all started in youth group. That all started in going to youth small group every Tuesday night. And that relationship still exists today, 15 years later. Here's the thing. Where you go is determined by who you go with. And for yourself, you maybe need to make some evaluations of who you're going through life with. Maybe you need to evaluate where you're investing your time and who you're investing your time around. But not only do you need to evaluate it, you need to evaluate where you're sending your kids, where you're sending your teenagers, because there might be some options that are better than who they're going with currently right now. We all need to make a decision. We are all looking at our president. We are looking at our government. We are looking at our bosses. We're looking at our pastors. We're looking at our parents. We're looking at all of our leaders. And we are so good right now of criticizing the leaders that we have in America. But what I want to encourage you to do this morning is to start to worry more about the American you see in the mirror every single day. I want to encourage you to lead yourself, because great leaders last because they lead themselves first. And God, whether you know it or not, has designed every single one of us to be a leader. I have to lead myself well in order to lead others well. And God is calling you to lead our children, our future. God is choosing for you to lead your marriages. God is choosing for you to be a leader in your company, at your jobs. Even if you aren't the boss, even if you don't have the power, you still have the ability to influence other people. You know what? This country's problems is not about one man or one position. Our country's problems have a collective impact. We are all a part of it. And if it is ever to change, if the values of our country are ever to change, if how we lead is ever going to change, it is going to begin with us and in our homes and in our communities. It's ever going to be any different. So I want to encourage you today to look in the mirror and to commit that I will not lie to myself even when the truth makes me feel bad about myself. I will prioritize what I value most over what I want now, and I will not attempt to lead myself by myself. Let me pray for you this morning. God, this morning as we come together, God, I pray that you would help us this week, that you would help us to look at the man in the mirror, at the American in the mirror, and that, God, we would lead ourselves well. God, would you please this morning help us to evaluate ourselves? If there's any area of our life where, God, we have lied to ourselves, God, would you help us to just face that this morning? Would you help us to take that guilt? And would you help us to analyze it, to judge it, to help us understand, God, maybe there's some truth there that we need to take away. Maybe it's something we need to throw away or not listen to, but maybe there is some truth there. Maybe there's a way we can lead ourselves better. God, will you help us to do that this week? God, this week as we sit down and we write our values, as we write what is valuable to us, God, would you just help us to discover where it is that we're going, what it is we value in this life. And then God, as we make those values, as we make those declarations, God, would you just help us to stay on that path? Because there are all kinds of times where we're offered self-gratification, quick answer, shortcuts. But God, there are no shortcuts to success. So God, would you help us to do the work, stay on the path, and continue to work towards the things that we value and that we want most at the end of this life. But then God, too, would you this morning help us to look at who we are going with? God, would you help us to look at our friendships and our relationships as we look to have strong marriages, as we want to be better parents and lead our kids well, as we want to be successful in our careers and have an impact on your kingdom and an impact on other people's lives, will you help us to look at who we're going with and help us ask the question, do these people that I'm surrounding myself, that I'm investing in, that I'm pouring, that I'm bringing my kids around, do they support who it is I'm trying to be, where I'm trying to go? And God, if we need to make decisions, if we need to make changes, if we need to meet new people, would you give us the courage to do that? Would you give us the courage to make new friends, to build new relationships, to invest in new people, but to pull the right people around us so that we can grow and be encouraged in our relationship with you? and the purpose and plans that you have for us in this life. God, this is what we ask of you today. God, we're going to make a commitment this morning to make the necessary changes and to lead ourselves well. We love you, God, and we pray these things in your name. Amen.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We'd love it if you'd help us out by hitting the subscribe button and leaving us a review. Also, join us at our physical location in Troy, Missouri at 211 Boone Street at 10 a.m. Thanks for listening.